I have an interesting question for you. What's the biggest lie we teach our children? There is a saying that we teach our children, or it's so common in our society that it's just kind of become a truism, but it's not true. It's a lie. I know it's completely out of the blue. You have no idea what I'm thinking of. So here's something to help a little bit. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Is that true? It is not true, is it? Words hurt us all the time. Words are the most dangerous weapon that we possess. You ever thought about that? I just kind of come to that realization when I was working, thinking about this lesson. I thought, you know, we say that all the time, but it's just not true. Words hurt all the time. There's another one that's a little bit funnier. Maybe you've heard, I'm rubber, you're glue. What you say bounces off me and sticks to you. That's not true either, is it? Sometimes words stick, especially when they hurt. So the question this morning is, when we teach things like this, when we go around saying things like this, are we unwittingly teaching people that our words have no consequence? If we go around saying that words will never hurt me, then we're apt to go around invariably and say things that are hurtful because we think it doesn't matter. Because I have this false notion in my mind that words don't destroy, words don't cut, or words don't harm relationships, when in fact they do. You may have had this happen to you or seen it happen to people. They say, somebody says something hurting or insulting or ridiculing to another person. They just kind of laugh it off and pretend like it, you know, didn't happen, or maybe it was just, oh, I was just joking, I didn't mean it. Maybe they believe that false principle that words will never hurt. You know, on the internet, Twitter and Facebook and all these social websites, we type instead of saying the words, and so we have to be really, really careful about what we type because you can't hear the person saying it, so it may come across wrong, but sometimes people will type something that's kind of insulting, or maybe they meant it as a joke, and they'll type LOL at the end and think, oh, well, that makes it all right. That doesn't make it all right. So how about instead of sticks and stones will break our bones and words will never hurt me, how about words will break our spirits? Sticks and stones will break our bones and words will break our spirits. We don't depend on me for insightful, amazing, philosophical notions about life. If you came here for that, you're going to be disappointed. But we can get information from the Bible concerning the words we use, because we know the Bible has everything that pertains to life and godliness. So here's what we need to teach our children instead. And not just our children, maybe we need to teach it to some of us that may be childlike in our language. Let's look at Proverbs 15. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. Crushes the spirit? That kind of sounds like that might hurt, huh? Does that sound like words will never hurt me? So look at the contrast there, depending on what kind of language you use. Either it's going to be a soothing words that are a tree of life, something that makes a person feel better, something that makes a person... Think about how on a hot day and we're outside, how good it feels to sit down in the cool grass under a tree. That's not a tree of life, but it's a tree of refreshing, isn't it? A soothing tongue is like that, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. And I looked up this perversion. I was wondering, what's the kind of background on that? What's it getting at? And it means crookedness or a crooked dealing. And it comes from the root word that means to twist. Sometimes this same word is translated as subvert or twist. So we might say that a person that uses their tongue, uses their mouth to, or their language to pervert the truth or twist things into their liking. And we might say, I'm going to kind of go out on a limb here. This is just me talking. When a person tweaks us, you know, a person kind of tweaks us, trying to get us to respond, trying to get a rise out of us, that kind of language crushes the spirit, is what it says. So that's kind of my interpretation of it. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. The Bible is also clear that controlling the tongue is paramount to controlling our spirit, our personality. Controlling our emotions and controlling our behavior starts with the mouth. Because where the tongue leads, the rest of us will follow. James famously compared it to the rudder of a ship and the bridle for horses. If you want to turn over to James chapter 3, starting in verse 2 through 5, I'm going to read it. James 3, verse 2, "For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man." Anybody here perfect? Well, if you don't ever stumble in what you say, you're a perfect man. Pretty safe to say that we've all stumbled in what we say from time to time. "He's a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. Now, if we put the bits into the horses' mouths so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire." So we have wonderful, wonderful illustrations there, don't we? By the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, we can all relate to this. Everybody can relate to this. Everybody's ridden a horse. Just a little bit in the mouth, you can make that 1,500-pound horse obey you and go where you want, make him stop, turn. A little piece of metal about that big, some straps. Or the ship has a rudder, have a strong gale, and as long as they can turn that ship the right direction into the wind, that ship will just scoot right across the sea. And we have Smokey Bear telling us to watch out for dropping matches and stuff. A little match can set a whole forest on fire. Isn't that wonderful illustrations? Isn't that just, can't we just all see that in our minds? That's how the tongue is. If we're talking negative, if we're talking positive things, let's think about the positive. If we're talking positive things, encouraging things, our body's going to follow. We're going to do the things that are helpful. Words, we can say, are a reflection of what is in our heart. You know, I didn't come up with this on my own. This is not something I've thought up. This is what Jesus said himself. Jesus Christ said this himself. Because he said, "For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things. An evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things." That's Matthew 12, 34 through 35. I know I've said it before, and I know I'll say it again. Didn't get up there, did I? You want to see the inside of a person's heart, all you have to do is just listen to the words they say. Because their deeds may not be relevant to what their heart has inside it. If a person claims to love their neighbor, what do they say about their neighbors? All of them. Do they say they're not do they claim to not be envious? What do they say when they see others being blessed? Are they saying they don't deserve that? Are they saying they shouldn't have that? Are they saying that they have probably got it by ill-gotten gains? You know, that's a popular game to play in politics. But what do we do ourselves? Do we claim to not be envious, and yet we say things like that? Here's one. Do they claim to love the church? Oh yes, I love the church. Jesus died for her. We should love the church just the same way. But what do they say about it when they're talking about it at home? Or what do they say about the church when they're visiting with their neighbors. Well, you know, everybody down there, nobody helps nothing. Everybody just complains and blah, blah, blah. That's a window to the heart. What do they say about neighboring congregations of the Lord's church? Are they bad-mouthing them? Are they spreading gossip and rumor? It's a window to the heart. Do they claim to support missionaries? We're going to discuss maybe with the men this afternoon what we might be, some things we might be able to support. Or do we just complain about how they're doing their work? Well, they just waste their money. There's more efficient ways to do it. They're not getting enough. No. What does the tongue say? Do they claim to be forgiving? Does a person claim to be forgiving? What do they say about past hurts? So, again, the question is, do we go around flapping our tongues like there's no consequence to our actions? Are we just thinking in our mind, well, words will never hurt? If we are, we need to stop and think about how we can change the course of our lives and repair the past harms we may have done with our tongues. So what are some of the benefits of restraint? For one, it avoids sin. Here's a truism that might be accurate. If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. That's a good one to teach our kids. Proverbs 10:19, in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. Did I get that big enough? It's a little bit small. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. But he who restrains his lips is wise. That's Proverbs 10:19. You know, it's a tactic of interrogation, whether it's the police or it's the CIA or whoever does the interrogations, a principal at school, there we go. Keep the people talking. If you keep people talking long enough, they're going to stumble and they're going to make a mistake and let the truth out, aren't they? They're going to forget what story they've already told. They're going to forget which lies they've already told. The more words we let out, the more likely we are to say something that is harmful. So we need to be very careful and meter our words to make sure that we're not using abundance of words, because the more words we use, the more apt we are to make a mistake. This may be more relevant to times of emotional stress or conflict. I don't think the proverb means we're just to button our lips and never say anything. That can be just as harmful, to never talk to somebody. But it says it restrains. Just like a horse with a bridle, we still use it. The horse still gets to walk. The horse still gets to run. But it's restrained. It's controlled. It's not just running wild. I think that's kind of how we can apply this. We don't let whatever comes to mind just roll off our tongue. We think carefully about what we say and make sure it's helpful and not harmful. Very similar to that is Proverbs 21:23. Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles. Again, it doesn't always mean to seal their mouth, seal their lips, zip them, but to guard it, you know, to make sure it's under control and make sure it's turned loose at the right time in the right ways. A person that is guarded in a cell, a person that guards a building, still lets people come and go. You know, the guard down at the bank, he lets people come and go, but we're very careful about who we let in and who we let out. That's the kind of way we need to think of our tongue. Proverbs 17:27-25, he who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent. I have a neighbor, he quoted a quote one time about a little owl that sat in the corner, and everybody thought he was wise because he was being quiet. And I wished I had wrote it down or something. I need to ask him what it is again, but it was kind of cute. But I know it was probably inspired by this proverb here. There's another saying you may have heard. It is better to remain silent at the risk of being thought a fool than to talk and remove all doubt of it. Now that quote, I did some research on it, has popularly been credited to Abraham Lincoln or Mark Twain. Thing is, it probably didn't come from him, either one of them. But either way, it's a good thought, isn't it? It's better to remain silent at the risk of being thought a thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt. The principle is the same. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's considered prudent. The point of this is, I think we might be able to say, is how are we going to better persuade people to become more Christ-like? Just a flood of knowledge, just, you know, just barrage them with the gospel, just barrage them with scripture, and just, you know, overwhelm them with all the scriptures we have memorized and all the things we know about the Bible and all the history and or our tremendous debating skill. Are we going to win them over that way? Are we just going to say everything that we know in a big flood? It says, he who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. So you need to be careful about how we convey God's message and make sure it's restrained, it's guarded, it's controlled. It needs to come out. There's no doubt about that. It needs to be said. We need to make sure it's like a horse with a bit. It's under control. These are words to live by. Uncontrolled tongues, the danger is it can destroy friendships and relationships. Poorly chosen words or rashly spoken words in a moment of anger can make even the closest friends estranged from one another. We can read how the psalmist felt. If you want to turn there, I don't have it all on the screen. He wrote about how he felt because he had been betrayed. He had lost a friend, and he was quite dejected about it. Psalm 55, 12 through 14. If an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. If a foe were rising against me, I could hide. But it is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship at the house of God, as you walked about among the worshipers. We don't know anybody like that, but we used to know, that used to come to worship, that we were friends with, that maybe experienced the harsh word. Where are they now? Maybe they feel like this psalmist here. He had been betrayed. He'd come from a friend. It was a companion. He said, you know, if he had been an enemy, I could have understood that. This can apply to anybody, not just house of worship. It can be our families. It can be our siblings. It can be our neighbors. You know, we kind of expect harsh words and insults from outside, don't we? From people of the world. We kind of expect insults and ridicule from them. That's kind of what he's saying here. If it was a foe rising against me, I could kind of hide. I could understand it. But we don't like it when it comes from somebody that is close to us. We need to remember that in the church. Just because we have known each other many times for years and decades, that doesn't mean we can speak however we want to one another and just shrug it off. And we just kind of, you know, we type LOL, laugh out loud. Oh, that's just kind of the way I am. That's the way I deal with things. That's not allowed. We will be judged in part by the words we use. Matthew chapter 12, 36 to 37. But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. How will that feel at judgment when Jesus reminds us of the things we have said carelessly to one another? Now, I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't know if there's going to be some sort of playback of the things we've said. It says we're going to have to give an account to it. I don't know if Jesus is going to say, look, you said this to so-and-so. What's your excuse? I don't know. It just says we're going to give an account. I don't know what that's going to be like. I'm not going to speculate. Point is, verse 37, for by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. We need to keep that seriously in mind when we're thinking about what to say at certain times. It might be helpful from time to time if we could hear ourselves, if there was some sort of current playback of the things that we say to one another. And it might help us understand where we need to improve. One more from James. James 3, verse 6. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell. Again, where the mouth leads, the body follows. Just like a small little fire, a little match sets a forest on fire, the words we use can direct our life. James is not talking about just politics or Hollywood or media. It says our members. That is all of us. It sets fire among our members. Be careful that we are not be careful that we're not setting our world on fire by the things we say, and then we become upset when everything is burning up all around us. Think about some positive examples of friendship that we have in the Bible. We have Ruth and Naomi. We have Jonathan and David. We have Jesus' great affection for his apostle John. And we also have Paul and his son in the gospel, as he called him. He referred to him in 2 Timothy 1, verses 1 through 4. What's the common thread among all these relationships? If you go back and look at these things, you look at the words that Naomi and Ruth used in just talking to each other. They were very kind words, the same way with David and Jonathan, the same way with Jesus and John, Paul and Timothy. Paul was constantly complimenting Timothy, constantly building him up, constantly, you know, talking about how he was praying for him, praying for his work. That's the common thread in all these relationships that we have, for examples. So where harsh words break down relationships, kind words build relationships with love. So do we still believe in sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me? Do we still believe that? If we do, we're going to go around saying the wrong things. Remember what Jesus said, "For every idle word men may speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment." One more scripture we're going to look at and we'll finish. Matthew 5, 21 to 24, if you want to turn over there. Jesus is discussing here the languages and the way we relate to one another, the words we use. Matthew 5, 21 to 24. "You have heard it that the ancients were told, 'You shall not commit murder.' And whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever says to his brother, 'You good for nothing,' shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, 'You fool,' shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery..." Oh, that place I'm not supposed to talk about. "You shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. Therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar and there, remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offering." I don't think today in the church we fully grasp how big of a deal this was when Jesus said this. He said that, yes, the law was right. Moses said, "Thou shalt not murder," and you're going to be guilty if you murder somebody. But I say he amended it. He added to it. He says if you do these things here, if you are angry with your brother, if you are insulting, if you are using derogatory terms, which is what that is, that good for nothing, it's a derogatory term that they had in the Aramaic language. If you're using these kind of words, you're just as guilty as a murderer. That's a big deal. You know, that was a big deal for the people of that day. And it should be for us too. Like I said, I don't think we fully grasp how big this is, because if we did believe it fully, I think some of us would be more careful about how we talk to each other. So whereas these people of Jesus' day thought, well, you know, I'm not murdering anybody, like we discussed this morning, you know, I'm a pretty good person. I'm keeping all these laws and I'm keeping all these statutes, but I think all these people should be murdered. I think all these people should be executed, and I'm going to support there like the council did, or the people did with Saul did at Stephen's death. They were consenting to his death. They stoned him to death. That's the same as referring to our brethren, referring to our friends and neighbors with these harsh words, these things that Jesus discussed here. He says, if you're coming to present your offering at the temple and you're having these thoughts, if you have been calling your brother these names, if you have been having these evil intentions, you need to make that right, because your offering is not going to be any good before the altar. So think about this week. We need to think about the harm that comes from the words we use. Think about how the words we use can tear down relationships. Think about how we can use them positively to build up relationships. Think about how we can make past wrongs right by using the right words. And most importantly, we need to remember that we're going to be judged according to the idle words we use, the derogatory things we say, the insulting and reviling things we say about one another. We're going to be asked to give an account of that, of the judgment. So if you have anything that you'd like to correct in your life, if you have any need this morning, we always offer an invitation as a standing invitation. If you would, let's stand and sing.